This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hey, this is Tim from Hide and Seek. This podcast is brought to you by Choosewell Health Insurance. While some things in life improve with time, it's unlikely your health insurance policy will. Choosewell. Compare hundreds of policy options to find the best health insurance for you at the right price. Don't spend hours researching and making confusing phone calls that leave you lost in the fine print. Hide and Seek listeners are being offered a special deal. Find a new healthcare policy with Choosewell to receive a free Joy membership, giving you benefits and rewards from Joy all year round. Stop paying for outdated cover and contact us today. Choose well. Make the switch today. joy.choosewell.com.au.
As we go along, let us study the male anatomy. Most men know less about their own bodies than they do about their automobiles.
Feature has been rated R.
Don't panic.
This program contains coarse language.
It is recommended for people aged 15 years and over.
Are you ready? Sit back, turn up the volume, and enjoy our show.
Welcome.
This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9, your show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self. You're with myself, Tim Little, and I'm joined by Andrew the Apprentice.
Good evening, Tim.
Good evening. How are you?
Very well.
That's good.
Us together 2 weeks in a row.
I know. Where is Dean? He's having a holiday.
Yeah, he's having a break.
It seems everyone's having a holiday but me. Although I did have one over Christmas and it was quite a long one, actually. Well, look, I'm very excited because we have Dirk Kaber and Jesse Jackman here in the studio tonight.
That's right. 18 months since their last visit here onto Hide and Seek. They are back in Australia for a jam-packed month.
Wow, so
right
much
around
stuff.
The country.
Workshops, performances, it's all happening.
It is all happening. So we're going to be chatting with them about that and a whole heap more very shortly. So we've had a lot of questions come in on social media.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. And
some great ones, too.
Some very good ones. Lots of proposals. Yes. Lots of requests for phone numbers to be passed along.
Eating asses, all that sort of thing.
All that sort of thing. But, you know, but some great questions as well. So, but it's not too late. You have a chance to send us a question, 0427JOY949, or you can email onair@joy.org.au right throughout this evening.
You're tuned to Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. We have Dirk Kaber and Jesse Jackman in the studio. If you want to get in touch with us, this is how you do it.
Share your thoughts. Email onair@joy.org.au. Have your say. SMS 0427 JOY949. And connect with your community.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek. Hide and Seek. Hide and Seek.
This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9, your show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self. You're with me, Tim Little, and Andrew the Apprentice. And speaking of sex,
yes,
we are joined by Dirk Kaber and Jesse Jackman. Welcome back.
Hello.
Hello again.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
18 months since we had you here in the Hide and Seek studios.
18 months, yes.
Yeah.
It's
time flies.
Yeah, not soon enough in our opinion. We love it here.
But you've got a packed month here in Australia.
We absolutely do. We're here in Melbourne for a week, and then we head up to Sydney for Mardi Gras, naturally, and then we'll be there for a week, then to Brisbane, and then back down here to Melbourne.
So why do you come to Australia to do this sort of stuff and to engage with the community?
Well, we really do love it here. I mean, I have a long history with Australia. I used to live in Armidale, New South Wales, when I was a teenager.
Wow.
So, long time ago.
Very different to Melbourne.
Yes, quite a bit different. But I got a chance to spend 3 weeks in Melbourne back there as well, back then as well, and loved it. So we had the opportunity to come back here and work with the Victorian AIDS Council a couple of years ago. Took it. Loved it. Had a wonderful time. And are very happy and thankful and lucky to be back.
Now, Tim and I want to frame tonight's discussion a little bit around performance pressure, which comes in a range of ways. Now, Dirk, I was reading one of your blog posts recently, and you were talking about an interview you did with Dan Savage, where you talked about the anxiety of doing interviews.
The interview was about something else, but the post itself was the terror of... I mean, it's one thing when you can sit down, you can see people's faces, and you can converse with them and so forth. In this case, it was done over the telephone, and I had no idea what was going on at the other end. And something of that degree of exposure hadn't really come my way yet. Yeah. So, yeah.
And it's also that, you know, you perform music to audiences, and you both run workshops with audiences. Do you get nervous doing those things?
Every single bloody fucking time.
I am fucking nervous right now, and we're on the air, and I've done this 8 times already.
But I mean, at least with music, the thing is, if you sit down and you start to perform it, you can disappear into your own little sound world. It's like, forget about the audience. Yeah. That's just completely, you know, peripheral to what's going on. On the other hand, something like that, where you're having the conversation, when you're interacting with somebody, when you know that somebody's running a tape somewhere. So this isn't just something which is going to happen once, and if something screws up, it's gone. It's down for posterity at that point. That really kind of weighs on me.
Film is forever.
Are you saying that, say, being on a radio show is more nerve-wracking than doing porn? Performing in front of a camera?
At least when you perform in front of a camera, you know that somewhere down the line, before anyone actually sees this publicly, there's going to be an editor.
Yes.
Who hopefully likes you enough to try to make you look good.
This this is live. This is no net for us. I would liken this closer to doing a live sex show in a venue, in a sex on premises venue, more than filming something. Because with filming, there is post-production. There is, you know, discussion as it's going on that's not being recorded. Here you get one chance.
Basically, there again, I'm drawing the distinction that with most live sex shows, nobody's in there with a camera.
True.
Except the audience, mm-hmm. or they're not allowed them.
Most places, they don't allow that sort of thing. So it's just kind of, you know, it's just for this occasion.
It's like Snapchat for sex. It's out there for a moment, then it's gone.
So as for porn stars, the live sex shows, you know, how do you find them? And how are they different to, say, filming?
Oh, that's a very good question. They are still challenging to me personally, because it's a live, crowded room. It's an audience. Filming is easier because you're there working with your fellow performer who's more than likely filmed before, and a crew of 3 or 4 professionals who have seen everything, filmed everything. This is their job. You know they're professionals. You can trust them. With an audience like that, there could be hundreds of people watching you, and it's a bit daunting to perform, as we're discussing, in front of an audience of that size. So the way I deal with it really is just to zoom into my own head and ignore everything else around me. The brighter the lights on stage, the better, because that means I can't see anything that's going on out in the audience, and just focus on my partner, who thankfully has almost always been Dirk in these live shows. So I know him, I trust him, and just sort of turn it inward, make it my own world, my whole world.
It's so funny that my approach is actually kind of the opposite on that, in that
right.
I am aware of the fact that, you know, on a porn set, you know that certain things are going on in certain positions, and you know that light has to get into this very otherwise dark corner, and that camera has to be able to see into that dark corner to see what's going on in there. So it's awkward, but you're only needing to open up to a very small number of people. in a live sex instance, those people are all the way around you. So it's, you know, you're aware this person over here has a prime viewing spot. That person over there, on the other hand, can't see anything except the top of Jesse's head. So at some point, you want to try to, you know, yeah, I'm sitting there thinking, let's try to maneuver this a little bit so that everybody in the room gets a little view of what's going on. Mm. And, you know, there's a certain interaction element of it. But it also adds all these other dimensions to what you're trying to accomplish on top of, okay, also having fun with Jesse.
Yeah, right.
And hopefully getting both of us to the point at which we're going to have that, you know, that final exegesis that everyone wants to sit there and cheer for. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So a lot more multitasking then.
I'm ADHD. I do that well.
One of the reasons I like working with Dirk in these live shows is that he worries about that, and I don't have to. So he's always making sure that people get to see and get a good view, and I just can zoom into my head.
And those occasional moments when all of a sudden there's a helpful hand from somebody in the audience to take a hold of the wrist and very gently move it to the side and give him a look like, don't do that again.
Yeah.
Without ever pretending anything happened. So,
yeah. Now, to add another dimension to this, is there a difference when you're shooting, say, kink porn, because I know you've both done that, as opposed to something like what Titan do, which is more one-on-one, is kink porn a bit more fluid?
No, if anything, it's quite a good deal less fluid in right. that what you see on the screen is far more edited with kink porn, particularly if there's a bondage element to it, or if there are bondage elements, you have to take time to set that up ahead of time.
Sure.
Rope bondage by itself in particular is not terribly exciting to watch. There's a reason that the top tends to walk into a scene in most of the things, say, on kink.com, and the bottom's already all tied up. It's frankly because you're the first hour of the scene is otherwise. And I mean, aside from the fact that the person who generally does the tying up, often for liability reasons, is the expert on set and not you as the performer. It's very rare. I've actually tied a knot for anybody I've tied up on set, quote unquote. And it's happened a couple times, but not often. But yeah, as a result, you know, you're always having to stop for a bit to adjust something or to set up something new. Or if you're coming out with a new implement or a new toy of some sort, you know, you stop and you give the guy a chance to figure out how much of this can you actually take? How far up can I turn the electricity on this thing? Or how far over do you need to hold the candle to get the right squeal? But know that if you have to do it 20 times, you don't burn the guy out too fast. So, you know, it's that all happens off camera. So it's not terribly fluid to do kink.
Sure.
On the other hand, if you're just doing a sex scene with somebody, particularly if it's somebody who's worked before, somebody you have your chemistry set with, and what can happen is, honestly, you get to the end of it and you realize the director never gave you a single direction. He was just, you know, I forget, it was something that you were filming recently where the director, Jason, simply says, I was not a director today. I was simply a documentarian.
Wow.
You just sat back and, you know, let it happen. And those are those moments where, you know, you come to the end of it and it's, oh, that's right. Yeah. That was a porn set.
I was entirely nervous the first time I was on set because I'd never done anything like that before. But I had the good fortune of knowing my co-star at that time, who lives in Brisbane now, by the way.
There's an Aussie connection.
Yeah,
as well.
So we'll be visiting him when we're up there. But having to constantly remind myself that these people have all done this before. They will help me if I need help. Just do the best that you can.
Sure.
And that got me through it. And it's really that sort of the level of trust in, if not your own abilities, then in a new situation where you're performing someone else's capability and proficiency in helping you through it is very important.
So do you have to, I guess, train yourself before you jump on set? Or something like that?
Train yourself.
I don't think there's really much education you can get outside of that. The best way to learn how to do it is to get on set and make a mistake or two. And
this is
laugh about it.
A very brief, a good story, actually. When I had first signed on as a Titan performer, and before I had filmed my first scene, I did some research. I had them actually mail me some DVDs of scenes that my scene partner had done in previous films, so I could sort of get an idea for what his proclivities were and what our roles would be in the film. And so I started watching some of these scenes, and that was my first exposure to Dirk. I had never heard of him before. He was relatively new in the industry at the time as well. But he was in one of those scenes that I watched, and I remember thinking, wow, who's that? So I actually knew Dirk before I met Dirk from the film, from doing research for the film that I, that for the first scene that I was in.
So you met on set?
We, in a sense.
No.
We didn't film together for a while after we had met, but we did meet at the Folsom Street Fair. In San Francisco in 2011.
And as a result of us both being in the industry.
Too. Yes. Yeah. And we worked together at the booth, and we connected instantly. And rest is history.
It's and been it was love at years. First sight.
Well, was best friends at first sight. it was 2 weeks later that actually we were, it was only 2 weeks later that we were sitting here thinking, you know, we need to look into this a little more deeply.
Yeah.
So
we were in complex, fast. We were in slightly complicated other relationships at the time. And so it was very clearly defined as friendship at first. And we helped each other through these, you know, complicated, in a couple, in both cases, sort of messy breakups and sure. bonded over that.
What was
that's
that?
A, that's you can read about that at dirkhaber.com.
You are on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. We are chatting with Dirk Haber and Jesse Jackman.
Hide and Seek. Joy 94.9.
This is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9, your program for exploring sex, sexuality, and self. Jesse Jackman and Dirk Haber are in the studio with us, Tim. And we talk about a whole range of things, but, you know, performance pressure, really. And we've been talking a little bit about, you know, live shows and on the film set. How do you keep hard in those sort of situations?
You have to pause pretty frequently and restore it somehow.
Yes. Yes.
And again, you know, if you're working with somebody you like and you have the chemistry with, it tends to take care of itself.
Yeah.
Okay. But, you know, energy being energy... you know, it's an athletic thing that you're doing. Mm. You spend a lot of time moving. You do have to stop at times to go to the bathroom. It helps a hell of a lot to pause and, you know, get a glass of water, eat something. All that stuff gives you time to sort of, you know, stop and recharge the other batteries as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, with that sort of moment to you know, ease up and go back and resume again, it keeps up with you.
That said...
Yep.
There are a number of questions that we get repeatedly, and
yes.
that's one of them. And the first answer that people don't want to hear is there are no fluffers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just, let's get that out of the way right now. But also, some people use them, some people don't, but sexual enhancement drugs
yep.
have really revolutionized the industry. It makes it a lot easier to film. And there are multiple levels of this that you can take. Some people take herbal remedies. Some
sure.
people take Viagra or Cialis. Some people take, I don't know if you're familiar with Caverject or mm-hmm. Trimix or injectable stimulants like
yeah.
that. And it really does, for those who need it, has made the industry a lot, it's made it a lot easier to film.
The other major difference in the industry that you've probably noticed is the fact that there are far more guys in their 40s and even 50s and older
yeah.
in the industry now. 20 years ago, that really would not have been considered because, you know, it takes a lot of physical stamina to maintain an erection and do all this physical work, yeah. which was pretty much the purview of the 20 and 30 year olds.
Yeah, but all the you know, enhancements or performance drugs or anything like that are no match for the largest sex organ that you have, which is, of course, your brain.
Sure.
If you get in your head, if you get stuck in your head and become anxious or nervous or distracted in any way, that will kill whatever boner you have. It, no matter what sort of drugs you're doing or no matter what sort of preparation work you've done or anything like that, your boner's just gone. So I think that getting in a good mindset and trying to relax around it and actually just having
a good
time. Not falling
into the vicious cycle of I'm going to fall into my headset and lose my erection. Which then causes you to fall into the mindset, which causes you to lose the erection.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah,
so. I had a bit of a crisis of that about 6 months into my porn career. And I'm like, I thought all of a sudden out of the blue, oh my God, what am I doing here? I'm fucking this up. I'm going to do a terrible job. And the director pulled me aside and said, everyone goes through this. Everyone goes through this at about the point you're going through it. You've proven to me that you can do this. I know you can do this. You are going to get through this, and it's going to make you a better porn star.
Mm-hmm.
And he was right. I got through that scene. I had this sense of accomplishment of having done so. And since then, it's actually been really so much easier to film. Right now, it's sort of second nature to me, and to the point where they're comfortable putting me with first-time performers because I'm able to help them feel comfortable enough to get through filming at this point.
What about the pressure to maintain that physique that everyone wants, that Adonis kind of built as a brick shit house, we like to say here, physique?
I mean, there's a standard terror of the fact that, you know, one of these studios might call tomorrow and say, can you be on set in 24 hours? And I'll look down at myself and think, well, only if I don't eat anything for the next 24 hours. But yeah, no, you do need to stay on top of things. And we both, particularly, you know, for Titan or somebody who really wants that big guy look, you know, at least there most of the time we get enough warning ahead of time that we can spend that last month really focused on leaning out and making it work. But I used to be in constant terror of letting anything slip for a bit just because, you know, I figured I have this little side career and I need to be, you know, representing myself on that level as my brand at all times, because you never know when you're going to be out in public at a bar or something like that and somebody's going to say, oh my God, can I get a picture?
Yeah.
And it's like, no. I'm not looking like this. I can't. You can't. But I've relaxed a lot about that now. It's... I do work to maintain what I look like, but I looking in perspective, if I'm not at my total peak, I'm still in pretty good shape.
Sure.
And, you know, as long as I'm able to say to myself, I'm fine, it's going to be fine.
And the pressure that we feel is, from our perspective, completely internal. I mean, I think once, years ago, one of the people at Titan said, okay, so just so you know, you're starting to look a little blocky. It's fine. Just next time you come here, just don't keep going down this path. That is the only thing that they have ever said anything about my physique. It's all been internally driven. And the pressure from inside is enormous. It's I feel a responsibility of to put out as, you know, solid a product as I am able to.
So it's not in a contract or anything like that?
No. Well, show up in lean and in shape.
Okay.
Basically is the extent of it. They will tell you gently if you're not meeting their aesthetic, yeah. But they've never been unkind about that.
Is it common to expect that performers, say, take a cycle of steroids to maintain that look?
It's pretty common, yeah.
I would say a good half of the performers in the industry,
sure,
routinely do that. And but not all. You see an awful lot of guys who have much more the long, lanky, lean look. And, you know, you're looking at them and saying, yeah, you probably don't.
Yeah.
Okay. Something that you find in the industry, interestingly speaking, pressure, is that you'll... the amount of work one gets, and I'm fortunate, I'm a contract performer, so I have a fairly steady amount of work. But for those who are not under contract with a particular studio, their amount of work will ebb and flow. They'll yep. film quite a bit for a short amount of time, and then they'll have enough material out there that the studios that they normally work with will not work with them for, it can be 6 months, it can be a year sometimes. And the performers will start to freak out a little bit. They'll say, oh my God, what have I done? Why won't anyone work with me anymore? And it's at that point, I think, that people start to take more drastic measures of, you know, really pushing themselves to either get their physique in shape through things like steroids or reaching out to studios that they would otherwise not normally work with because they're desperate for work. They're worried that they're not going to, that they've somehow
slipped
mm-hmm. a bit. So that's where we see a lot of people get into trouble, is they'll go down paths that they're really...
And what's funny is they'll actually overcompensate. I was warned probably in my first couple scenes by Titan that, here's the thing, we see you working very hard to get bigger. Careful about that, because large muscles on camera simply look fat. You end up looking bloated. Mm-hmm. Go for lean, go for defined, go for cut, go for sleek. And steroids often don't really produce that look. And, you know, I've had moments where I've looked at colleagues of mine and thought, you look like a cartoon of yourself. And then you meet them in person, they just look big yeah. and muscular yeah. and all that other stuff. But when you saw them on camera, it was like, oh, no, that's not what you want at all. But, yeah, you know, it's...
So for someone listening tonight or on the podcast, how often would you guys go to be going to the gym? Is it you know 3 hours a day every day, or is it
close? You're not that far off. Wow. Two hours at a minimum, and yeah, it is daily. Yeah, okay. We it's been rough for us not being able to work out the last 3 days.
I'm
we
really
worked out just
right
before
now.
Getting on the airplane.
Yep.
And then we had the 28-hour flight to get here, and then we've not worked out today. So tomorrow is a top priority for us to get to the gym.
Because I think that's important for our listeners to understand that, you know, for you guys and the people who are used to seeing you in photos or seeing you at the bars or whatever, that's the amount of effort you go through. So for someone else who's working, you know, a day job and goes to the gym maybe a couple of times a week, they're not going to be looking like you guys.
No, it's true.
But that's just it. So, talk about a different standard to have to hold yourself to anyway. Mm. That person, I'm sure, looks fine.
Yes.
And we have to remember there are an awful lot more things that go into what makes a person attractive and sexy and all of this thing than what the hell your body looks like or how healthy you are or whatever. So, you know, the fact that we exist on this very, very tippy-top little peak of a pinnacle and you know, any little slight deviation from that for us it can be this moment of panic. We recognize kind of on the upper end of what's out there. Which isn't to say that there isn't a whole host of options below that, which are perfectly gorgeous and acceptable. And, you know, people look at us and say, well, you would never be into me because, you know, if you look at the muscle guy you are, it's like, are you kidding me?
Well, look at you. Well, we also both were the sort of, you know, stereotypical fat kid in school. You know, Dirk was up to 280 pounds at one point, not in a good way. And I was not quite that big, but definitely round and unathletic. And so I always have that little voice in the back of my head putting pressure on me to keep going, go to the gym, don't be that kid anymore. And I've come to realize that, in a sense, that's kind of a fat-shaming thing, that it's okay to be like that if that's what you're comfortable with. But the fact of the matter is I'm personally not comfortable with that. And, yeah, sure. I have some baggage around that from when I was a kid, and I'm aware of that. And it does motivate me, but I've been going to the gym 6 days a week long before when I started working in the pornography industry. It's been essentially my church. I go there to focus and meditate, essentially, and while I'm working out. And so I enjoy getting in the routine. I enjoy going every day. It wasn't a big transition for me when I entered the industry. So in a sense, the pressure is, again, coming internally for me to not be the fat kid.
It simply feels good.
Yeah.
Is there a pressure to be role models, being in the position that you're in?
There is. Because you know people are watching you, and being in this industry makes you a lightning rod for judgment for people who, you know, need to feel like they have to find somebody to put down to make them feel better.
Sure.
Or just, you know, people envious of whatever silly thing they think we have here that they don't, which really isn't that anything that extraordinarily special or anything. We just happen to do what everyone else hopefully does in their bedrooms with people they love in front of a camera.
Sure.
It's on the other hand, we also want to be out in public and be able to say, this is how you could be socially, you know, agreeable to pretty much anybody around you, not necessarily, you know, feeling like you're going to be pressured to. I see an awful lot of people who interact and only with people they find physically attractive. You know, they have friends who are only people they would actually have sex with.
Sure.
Or something like that. And that's a gross simplification, of course, but you don't have to be like that. I mean, you know, that 70-year-old man on the other side of the bar probably has something really interesting to tell you in terms of a life story or something like that, which you are going to miss out completely on if you refuse to answer when he says hi to you, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
There's so much out there that I want to be the person walking into a bar who people are going to be able to say, yeah, that guy could walk out of here with anybody he wants. And yet, he's talking to this person. Now, what's that person got that's interesting enough to hold his attention? Well, there's a connection of some sort, and it doesn't have to be physical.
Yeah.
So as a result, hopefully somebody else will look and say, maybe there's more levels to it than just simply, I want to fuck.
And when you say role model, my first reaction, of course, as it always is who, me? of all the fucking people on the earth, how the hell did I become a role model? I'm this little, you know, guy from Boston who works as a systems engineer at a healthcare facility, and I just have, you know, I'm lucky enough to stumble into an industry and a part-time job that I like. Why am I a role model? And but I get responses from people as if I am, so I've sort of slowly come to embrace the role, mostly from a relationship perspective.
Sure.
I feel like it's very important to be very visible and out there as a healthy gay relationship still, because there's so much prejudice against gay couples and such a heteronormative society that we live in. I think it's important to show that gay relationships can be healthy and loving just as much as any straight relationship can be. So I think that our visibility in that regard is very important. And yeah, I can see why people look up to us as role models, because they want a healthy relationship for themselves and have been sort of trained by society to think that maybe that's not for them because they're gay. And I say, bullshit, look at us. And if that's being a role model, great. I love it.
Absolutely. Amen. Amen.
You're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. We are chatting with Jesse Jackman and Dirk Kaber. Lots of questions from our audience coming up very shortly. You're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9.
Hey there, it's Jace, head of Joy Production, here to talk up our Joy podcast service. Last month, our community downloaded around 34,000 Joy podcasts. Check them out when you get a bit of downtime and find out why our audience is loving what's on offer. Visit joy.org.au/podcasts to view our most recently posted episodes. Head to iTunes or your podcast app to find your favorite program, a mix of content you might have missed live, and a range of fresh podcast material you'll only find on podcast. It's easy to subscribe to the program of your choice, whether you're viewing at joy.org.au or on your phone, which means you won't miss any future episodes. Get away from your busy day. Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them, at joy.org.au and via iTunes.
Joy 94.9.
We're with Dirk Kaber and Jesse Jackman tonight, and we've had loads of questions from people, fan questions, if you will.
That's right, we have. As we were saying, lots of phone number requests.
Requests to eat your ass.
Yes.
There's one there.
Requests for you to do home visits. All those sort of things. A couple of good ones, though. Have you... Dirk, let's go with you first. Have you ever wanted another guy to do something to your partner that you couldn't do or felt uncomfortable to do yourself?
Okay. The start to that answer to the question is probably the fact that anything that Jesse would enjoy having done to him is probably something I would be perfectly happy to do. I'd probably been a good deal more sexually adventurous than Jesse. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What do you think?
It's hard to imagine a scenario in which that would be the case. This sort of brings into something that we like to call the one rule. We do have a rule in our relationship, which is never bring home anything you don't want to share.
Yep.
Which I think we talked about the last time we were on here. Yeah.
Yes.
It works on a lot of levels, but again, we share experiences like this.
Yep.
So if it's something that someone else would want to do to me, it's something that he would do to me as well. So
why you guys are together. That's, you know,
yeah.
That's those things.
Yeah.
I'd still enjoy watching it. Sand on the side with the pom poms and the extra bottle.
As far as I'm concerned, you can film it and put it online. I'm cool with that.
They're even better.
Yeah. Okay. Another one. Jesse, let's start with you.
Yeah.
What stereotypes have you faced, not only as porn stars, but porn stars who are partners?
Oh boy! Oh, there's a lot. I'll start with the porn star one. Dumb, depraved, damaged in some way. You know, yep. There must be something wrong with me in order to have to resort to this industry where I'm selling my body, essentially. Yep. No, that's completely wrong, and that's bullshit. I'm doing the pornography because it's an amazing experience, and it's a new experience that I was always curious about doing, and I thought if I didn't try it, I'd never get the chance. And I really resent the fact that people think there must be something wrong with me. It's like, hell no. I'm enjoying this. As far as the relationship, the couple, is concerned, we get judgments for being in an open relationship, I think. We are sexually very open, and that works well for us. And for people who will come on and criticize us for being open in our relationship, I usually respond with, you know what? I don't judge you for your relationship, your, you know, monogamous relationship, and I would appreciate the same courtesy that you don't judge us for ours. Yeah. It works for us.
We get an awful lot of people responding as well. Well, we'll see how long you guys last.
Yep. Oh, dear God,
you
yes.
know, it's, I mean, it's jealousy is going to take over at some point. You guys, one of you is going to leave the other.
Well, yeah, they'll tell me I'm tired of you gushing over your partner, your fiance. It's like I can't wait till the two of you guys break up and your blog posts will come back to haunt you. But, they haven't so far. It's been six years.
Mm-hmm. And Tim, we just had a message in from Tom from Adelaide.
Yes, he said.
Tom.
What advice would you give to someone who wants to join the porn industry but wants to make sure they don't end up with only one or two average movies? How do you maintain a career?
Well, first of all, there is no career in porn. Porn is not something that you're going to do and make a living at, so don't give up your day job, whatever you do. And there are no porn stars out there that don't have a day job of some sort. I'm a musician. Jesse does IT. Escorting, of course, is a very long-lived and respected day job for a porn star. My best advice is get yourself in the best shape you are, be as ready as you can, and start out as high up the ladder as you can. Don't think you're going to start at some entry-level porn studio and work your way up to the Titans and the Cult Studios and so forth. Start out ready to jump in at the top, and don't take a step down from that.
And respect yourself when you do. You know, if you're uncomfortable with something, don't just go along with it because you think, oh, that must be the way things are done. Speak up for yourself and don't agree to do anything that you don't want to do. You should be in this for you. You are the one who's enjoying this. You're the one who's getting things out of this. If someone tries to force you to do something and you think, well, I guess that's what I got to do in order to make it in this industry, don't do it. You're only going to hurt yourself in the long run.
Perspective is this way. How many porn stars from 20 years ago can you name? How many porn stars from 20 years ago do you think there were? There were a lot of them.
Yeah,
there is no lasting fame to be gained in this. You're not going to make enough money to live on. So if you can't do this for the fun of doing it and maybe a little extra cash, you shouldn't be in it. This is an art like anything. Do it because you enjoy the creation, not because you expect to produce the next Mona Lisa.
Absolutely. Yep. Have you guys ever had to do something you didn't want to do, or have you ever declined doing something?
I had to tase Dirk with a real life 100,000 volt taser on set, and I'm terrified of electricity. So
whose idea was this?
Of course it was his idea.
Dom, Jesse,
It was a flip scene, actually. Okay. We started out with him being the Dom, and I turned the tables because I have a taser hidden in my boot for some reason.
Love it.
And so I shock him into submission. The water sports was a bit tricky for me. I'd never done that before. I'm fairly vanilla as porn stars go, honestly, even in my private life, but I'd never done water sports before, and they wanted me to do it on set, and I had the right to say no, and I said, you know what, screw it, let's try it. It's not going to hurt anybody. It's something that I will be like, all right, I'm willing to give this a shot, and I ended up really, really enjoying it. So,
just going to say, the other end of that is there are roles that I've come to say, you know, okay, that's enough of that. One of my studios working with started casting me as the stepfather, you know, the stepfather that the stepson lusts after or whatever, which the first couple times I did, that was kind of cute, you know, all right, sure, I get it. And I understand why this is a potent fantasy for certain guys and all that other stuff. But about the 20th scene where I am suddenly creepy stepdad again, I finally had to say to the studio, you know what? You have other things you could let me do besides this. Mm-hmm. You know? And don't you? I mean, and you guys have other guys that you must be able to cast in this role. Can I do something else now, please? And they said, you know, you're right. You're absolutely right.
Okay, I've only ever refused one thing, which was that I won't do sort of age-related play. I don't want to be cast in that role of the, you know, the creepy stepfather. I have difficulty working with people who are not, you know, who are considerably younger than I am. So I turned down a scene that was actually in a in that role, and what that resulted in was actually led to my scene in a film called Out, which I ended up co-writing, and it discusses the coming out process of a professional baseball player. So it was a really amazing opportunity that came about because I sort of had the courage to push back a little bit against the studio and said, I can't do this. I'm sorry. And so they said, okay, we respect that. How about this? And it was the opportunity of a lifetime.
Because you have to be hard and you have to be on game. And if you're not into it, then it's not going to work, right?
Yeah, true.
Now, as we rapidly head towards the end of the program and it's some quick plugs shortly, as we've mentioned throughout the show, there's lots of performance pressures for you guys. What are some words of advice for our listeners about if they're in a visiting a guy at home and they can't get it up or they're performing in front of others? What are some of the things you would recommend to them about reducing that anxiety at that time, in that moment?
Just remember, at a moment like that, ultimately you are in control. You have the decision-making power to walk away at any moment. You have the right of refusal if you want. If there's an environment you're not comfortable with, and once you know that ultimately this decision to be in this situation is yours, then that gives you a much more sense of comfort. And
conversely,
removes the pressure.
If you're in a position where you really want this to happen and all this sort of thing, the truth of the matter is that sometimes male bodies just don't cooperate. And you both, as the person to whom this might be happening, or the guy who's witnessing this person who's come over and is having difficulty coming, you both have to understand that, let's go watch some TV for half an hour or something like that, and give yourself a chance to sort of reset all those little buttons inside that have to be pushed in the right order, and come back to this fresh in a little bit. Get a little food.
And
get a little,
real quickly, I think in porn you set up a bit of an unrealistic expectation.
Yeah.
As everybody's hard, everybody's going to get off. The real world isn't like that. So if you're getting your advice about these things from pornography, you're going to be misguided. Truth is, everyone, ourselves included, have experienced the situation where you come over and it's just not working.
Look, even in porn on set, it doesn't always work.
Yeah.
So, this is where you really get into the head game.
Isn't editing a wonderful thing?
Yeah, seriously.
So everyone's been there. Best. Everyone has that experience. It's not that embarrassing because we've all shared that experience. So people understand.
There you go, people. Porn stars are people too. You guys are very busy while you're here. And one thing that I'm looking forward to, Dirk, because I'm going along to one of them, is your workshops. So
Excellent. You're
doing some at Eagle Leather.
Mm-hmm.
One is an impact play workshop.
Mm-hmm. How to slap a guy around and keep him smiling. Yep.
And you're doing some wax play and ice play?
Temperature play. That's kind of a revisiting of one that I did a year and a half ago there. And so we talk about hot wax and how to do it safely and how to make it fun and how to clean up afterwards and ice and various chemical items you can have or other implements you might have lying around the house like Coke cans or whatever else, and all sorts of fun and games.
So that's all happening on the Labor Day weekend. In the meantime, you've got Head On this coming Friday night at the Laird. Then you're heading to Sydney for Mardi Gras and Brisbane at the Cruise Club.
Correct. Yes, we're doing a live show on the Friday night.
So check out all the details all across social media and your website. It's all there.
Yeah.
Time for us to go, Tim.
I know. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much, guys.
Really appreciate having you down to the studio.
Coming up next is Declan with Indie Heads. All of our podcasts, including this one, are available at joy.org.au/hideandseek. And we will be back next week. Big thank you, of course, to David, who does all of our podcasts. There's been a little bit of a delay in some of them, but they're all up and running very, very shortly.
But it's not his fault.
It's not his fault. Exactly.
Thanks so much, David. This is Hide and Seek signing off. Have
Bye.
A great week. Bye.
Hey, this is Tim from Hide and Seek. This podcast is brought to you by Choosewell Health Insurance. While some things in life improve with time, it's unlikely your health insurance policy will. Choosewell. Compare hundreds of policy options to find the best health insurance for you at the right price. Don't spend hours researching and making confusing phone calls that leave you lost in the fine print. Hide and Seek listeners are being offered a special deal. Find a new healthcare policy with Choosewell to receive a free Joy membership, giving you benefits and rewards from Joy all year round. Stop paying for outdated cover and contact us today. Choose well. Make the switch today. joy.choosewell.com.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.